This is Health First with Dave Fuller, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, our next guest is Dr. Jonathan Beattie. He is a naturopathic physician. He works out of Ontario and has been on the show before. Dr. Beattie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's always good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about, heart disease and how it's affecting Canadians, seeing as this is the time of year when people are talking about heart health.
Well, yeah, it is. We're getting into heart month, and with that, heart disease still ends up being one of the leading causes of death amongst Canadians, and probably the biggest thing with it is that it tends to be what they call the silent killer, where a lot of the times, you know, a lot of patients, although we monitor blood pressure and other items, they end up not knowing that they have a heart condition, of course, until they have the big heart attack.
And what are some of the things that are indicators that somebody might have a heart condition? You know, especially if it's a silent killer.
Well, with that, there's a couple of key items that people can kind of keep an eye on, and you know, you can get into seeing your doctor, having your stress test, your EKG or ECG. You can also look at something called C-reactive protein, homocysteine levels. And then, of course, the other big one that everybody tends to focus quite a bit on is cholesterol. That tends to be one of the sort of big hot button issues for looking at heart disease risk.
But, you know, in terms of cholesterol, I think there's some debate on whether or not it is really, you know, we really should be focusing on that. What does the naturopathic community say?
Well, I mean, even within the naturopathic community, you will get a little bit of a mixed response. That being said, I mean, my personal opinion of it is it's not really necessarily always the key factor. I mean, often we look at taking out all these artificial interventions to reduce cholesterol. Cholesterol, to me, is a warning sign of heart disease. And I think this is one of the most misinterpreted areas when we start looking at heart disease, that, you know, people think by lowering your cholesterol that you're actually, you know, artificially, that you're actually improving your risk of heart disease. And that's not all that accurate. The cholesterol molecule is a response molecule to inflammation. And so if you lower the cholesterol without addressing why the cholesterol is elevated in the first place, you're not really doing yourself a great service. You're merely just getting rid of that warning sign.
So if the warning sign, if cholesterol is a warning that we have high cholesterol, what are some of the things that we can do to lower that?
Well, the real key there is trying to identify your causes of the high cholesterol. And cholesterol being a response molecule, cholesterol is produced by the body. You know, a large chunk of it's produced in the liver, and it's produced in response to inflammation. So your previous guest, Megan, she was speaking about, of course, having, I believe it was Crohn's disease, which is an inflammatory bowel condition. So that long-term, even that condition, would lead to increases in cholesterol levels as a response to the inflammation. Mm. Now, mainly the cause is inflammation within the circulatory system, or inflammation of the arteries, inflammation of the veins, that actually lead to the elevations of cholesterol. So what you ultimately need to do is not necessarily lower the cholesterol just by, you know, taking a drug that blocks cholesterol production, but by actually treating the inflammation of those arteries and veins.
Okay, because that brings me to the next question. Because sometimes we see athletes that drop or have a heart attack. People that seem to be in good shape, they're doing a lot of exercise. Can exercise cause inflammation in the arteries? And can cholesterol, which is trying to fix those problems, cause heart attacks in that case?
Well, yes. Every time we exercise, essentially what we're doing is we're putting a stress on our bodies. And stress, we often think of more, you know, the emotional stress, you know, the fight with fight with your wife, or a fight with your spouse, something along those lines. But really, stress is any stimulus above and beyond what our normal body functions can handle. So even exercise basically puts a stress onto our arteries, onto our veins, asking them to work a little harder. And if you ask them to work harder than they're capable, you will create a little bit of low-grade damage, which creates some low-grade inflammation that the body needs to heal. Now, if you do that too often, you can actually create more damage in those structures than your body can heal in the time between bouts of exercise, or between exercise, you know, classes, however you want to distinguish it. So if you actually over-exercise, one of the things that can cause a problem is you create more inflammation than your body's capable of healing. And in response, what it's going to do is it's actually going to raise your cholesterol again to try and speed up that healing process.
So Dr. Beatty, now, how do we know, you know, we know when we over-exercise, a leg muscle or an arm muscle, because, you know, we feel that pain. How do we know when we've gone too far with our heart?
Well, back to the silent killer. Unfortunately, this is one of those areas where, you know, if you may experience chest pain, you may start to experience shortness of breath. One of the things you'll start to see is a decreased exercise tolerance. So, you know, you'll be able to have a really great workout one day, and then you may find that the next day your workout's just not as good. And that's because the circulatory system, your heart, your arteries, your veins, are less capable of responding to the need. You know, your body's going to ask for a ton of oxygen, lots of blood flow. And unfortunately, on that day, because it's a little bit damaged, your body becomes less capable of delivering that oxygen. Mm-hmm. The other factor there is that with inflammation brings acidity. And the other trouble with that is when your body's a little bit acidic, it actually carries about 20 times less oxygen in your blood. So this will also increase the demands on your heart. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. But that inflammation, not only does it make your arteries and veins less stretchy, less capable of dealing with the increased pressure, but it also makes them a little bit acidic, which makes your body less capable of carrying the oxygen, meaning your heart's going to have to work even harder to deliver it.
So, you know, a lot of people, they take a protein supplement after they work out, which is, in a lot of cases, can be acidic to the body. Is that a good thing to be doing?
Again, it all depends on the type. So proteins, yes, they can be a little bit acidic. But again, you need, what you've done is you've created damage to the arteries and to the heart muscle itself. And the key factor here is these are muscles. And in order to be able to repair them, you do have increased protein requirements. For instance, the average person, they require about a gram of protein per kilogram of their body weight. However, the more we start to exercise, because we create muscle damage, not just to the skeletal muscles, but also to the muscles of the heart, the small muscles that actually help constrict or relax our arteries and veins, we do have increased protein requirements. And so your protein requirements can go up to, 1.5 grams, all the way up to 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. So I do believe it is important to have protein after exercise. However, if you move over to something like a plant-based protein after exercise, these can be a little bit more alkalizing, less acid-forming. So it helps your body deal with the metabolic acids you create from exercise while also delivering adequate protein for the healing that's required.
You say plant-based proteins. What plant-based proteins are you thinking about?
Well, I'm a big fan, especially for exercise, of two types of protein. My absolute favorite, if you're looking at somebody who likes to exercise a lot, is sprouted brown rice protein. And the reason for this one is it's a very alkalizing version of a protein, but it's also the protein equivalent of whey, which whey is considered the ideal protein for human consumption. Trouble is, as Megan alluded to, whey comes from dairy, which a lot of people can be sensitive to. And as well, one thing with whey is it can be a little bit acid-forming in some people. So organic sprouted brown rice protein, it is sort of that perfect substitute that's a little bit more alkalizing while delivering all the proper amino acids or components of a protein that the body needs to heal and recover. The other protein I really like for after exercise is a hemp protein. Mm. And the reason I'm a really big fan of hemp, and this would be something appreciated more by people who were tuning into the first half of your show that have a lot more of the digestive concerns, So sometimes the limiting factor with a protein is not its quality, but it's its digestibility, which if people have difficulty breaking proteins down, they can be very heavy after a workout. They can actually make people feel almost nauseous. And the interesting thing with hemp protein is it contains most of its protein in two forms, which are called albumin and adestin. Now, remembering those names, not the most important aspect. The key factor is those proteins, unlike other proteins that need to be broken down into their individual components, their amino acids to be absorbed, hemp proteins are actually able to be absorbed whole. So somebody that has impaired digestion, they can actually absorb more of the protein out of hemp protein than they'd be able to get out of other types of proteins.
We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Beattie. We're talking about heart health. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about some of the foods and supplements that you can take to really improve your heart function.